Good afternoon, everybody. Hello out there. Hi. Good afternoon. It's good to see everybody. Hugh Ross is not with us today. He is in North Carolina at a conference that I usually try to go to and couldn't this year. But say prayers for him, and he will not be with us next week either. But that's a good thing in this case because we have a really special guest, Dr. Mark Clark, with us for 2 weeks. And today he is going to be talking about, as you see, you don't see up there on the board, he's going to talk about recent government-released UAP data files. We're going to talk UFOs and what that means and who's behind it and how the Lord fits into all of that. So let me introduce Dr. Clark. I've got to read this with 69-year-old eyes, and it's like really tiny, so forgive me. Dr. Clark is an emeritus professor of political science and national security studies at Cal State University, San Bernardino. He's authored several dozen articles, academic articles on national security and intelligence, and also received several large grants from the Office of the Director of the National Intelligence, National Science Foundation, and the Intelligence Advanced Research Projects Activity. He is active in his home church, which is Foothill Church in Glendora. Mark served in the U.S. Marine Corps from 73 to 77. He and his wife, Mara, live in La Vergne, California, and Durango, Colorado, and has had a long association with Reasons to Believe. So this is really going to be a special presentation. Remember, he presented a few months ago on his book, Daniel in Babylon, and he also has a chapter in one of Hugh Ross's books, which is, in my opinion, the worst titled book in RTB's library, Lights in the Sky and Little Green Men, but it's a terrific book on a lot of the stuff that we're going to be talking about this afternoon. Joey Versace from Reasons to Believe is going to be with us November 9th. Remember, he gave us this fantastic presentation a few months ago. And what's coming up on October 26th? The Skeptics Forum. That's right. It's the first one we've done, we'll be doing after COVID. So this is, what's that, Mark?
4 years.
It's been 4 years since we've done a Skeptics Forum. So remember, it's kind of the reverse of class. It will be at the same time. We'll be going to 2 o'clock, and it's going to be more question and answer than a teaching. So he'll say some controversial things that'll get you going. It's all about Q&A, so bring your skeptical friends, bring your unbelieving friends, and bring yourself, and bring your own very good questions. We'll be able to ask questions online, we'll be able to ask questions in class. And you know, one thing that I don't say very often is that if you're in class personally and you're just kind of shy to go to the mic for questions, write it out on a piece of paper and hand it to me, and I'll be very happy to ask the questions for you. So thank you very much for everybody who brings treats. It's a very informal system. You bring something, you eat something, you bring something more, share it with everybody. But we do have a sign-up sheet for the Skeptics Forum because we want to make sure that we have really good treats for the Skeptics Forum, not quite as casual a system as we usually do. So let's pray and we'll get to Dr. Mark Clark. Heavenly Father, we are so grateful, as always, for this class where we can talk about intellectual things that lead us to a better relationship with you, Lord. We thank you so much that Dr. Clark is coming to talk to us this afternoon. We ask your blessing on him and his mind and his words, and that everything he says and does is honoring to you and a blessing to all of us, Lord. Thank you so much. Bless you, Ross, as he is away this Sunday. Always want to be praying for him, Lord. We thank you so much for his presence and who he is to this class. Thank you, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen. Please welcome Dr. Mark Clark.
May I borrow the Lights in the Sky book?
Yep, absolutely.
Thank you, sir.
Well, thanks, everyone. I appreciate this time to talk to you. And for those of you who are live streaming or seeing it later, welcome. Today's talk is kind of interesting for a couple of reasons. You're going to get the first preview of our new book. This book, Lights in the Sky and Little Green, the inaptly named, as Ross would say, Lights in the Sky, Little Green Men, was done by the time our new book's published, it'll be 25 years. So around April 2027 will the new book come out. This book was not produced by RTB Press. We had no control over the selection of the title or the name or the organization. So in many ways, how we structured that book had to accommodate their wishes. So if you actually had read this, you'll see that there's always a little anecdotal story at the beginning, and it's fictional, and it's supposed to lead you into each chapter. And that's always a question, you know, when you develop a manuscript, when you develop a product that especially has more than one author, you have to think through how are we going to organize this? If it's an edited volume, that's one thing. The editor has control. If it's two people, they work together and try to maintain coherence. If it's three people, it's catch as catch can, and that's kind of the way this is. So anecdotally, I will tell you, a year and a half, almost 2 years ago now, in fact, Hugh, Ken Samples, and I, the three authors of the original book from 2002, got together and said, okay, it sounds like people really want a new version. This one's been out of print for a few years. Fortunately, we had a donor make a whole new batch, but they've been going fast, especially with what's going on and what I'm going to talk about today, since about 2017. Now, I want to put this into a larger context. The book is probably, I want to say, 14 to 16 chapters. It's heavily relying on Hugh's section on the science behind it. That is whether life, ETI, that is extraterrestrial intelligence, SETI, search for extraterrestrial intelligence, extrabiologics, and all those things are real. He's going to talk about the science. I'm only going to talk about two components of it, which I did in the original book. And the first component is going to be on the UAP phenomena, which is the modern term for UFO. And then next week I'll talk about, is there a government conspiracy hiding or conspiring to conceal a reverse engineering UAP program? As one or two people have claimed, it's been going on for something like 90 years. But today we're going to focus on recent UAP reports of UAP. And I have a fun thing to do at the end. I'm going to go through my presentation. We'll do some Q&A, and depending on how much time we have, I have an 8-minute, 30-second short video of the same content, but it's developed by AI. It has an AI voiceover, and I would like to see how it strikes you and how it reinforces or doesn't reinforce what I said today. All right, let's get into this. So the background is, and I just really want to kind of touch on a couple things here. I'm not going to spend too much time with it. But they changed the name from UFO, unidentified flying objects, to UAP, unidentified anomalous phenomena. Now, before that recent designation, it was called, in different countries, France, for example, called it unidentified aerospace phenomena. England called it unidentified aerial phenomena. We started calling it unidentified aerial phenomena, but there's reasons why it's called anomalous phenomena now. And that is because not all the UAPs fly. That is, they're not all in just the air or in space. They are what we've seen and observed, to some extent, transmedium craft. And what do I mean by that? There have been reports that some of these craft have been found to cruise underwater at high velocities, come out of the ocean, go into space, and come back down and land in the water and continue to move. So they decided to make it a more scientific, all-encompassing term in the first part. And the second part is they also wanted to reduce the stigma attached to reporting UFOs. And there has been, especially for people in the military, a stigma attached to that term. And just so you know, in the book, when you see UAP, and I'm not sure, I have to look at editorial and how they manage it, but at least as I've read it, it can be singular or plural. What do I mean by that? It's either a unidentified anomalous phenomenon or phenomena. That's why it's singular or plural. So the early investigations, and we talk about a lot of this in the first book, Project Sign, Grudge, and in particular Blue Book, were concluded in 1969. And the basic conclusion was, really, there's nothing to do with this. The Air Force, in particular, led the studies of these things, and they cited over 12,000 UFO encounters of different kinds, and all but 701 of them could be resolved. And we'll talk about newer resolutions today, but either it was airborne clutter or it was people, you know, and Hugh talks about the classic example. He's taken phone calls for people who would report a UFO, and then he'll first thing he'll ask, you know, is it night? Yes. Okay. Is your eyes adjusted to the dark? Yes. Are you inside the house? And the person said, yes. Is there a chandelier on behind you? And he goes, oh, yeah. He turned it off. The UFO went away. So there's a lot of that. And there's some atmospheric phenomena can make it look like. I know a lot of times if you watch the night sky, you'll see Starlink aircraft or spaceship shots out there. And people go, what is that? Is it a UFO? So that was the conclusion in 1969. And the U.S. government literally got out of the business of UFO research and pretty much didn't want anything to do with it. But that doesn't mean it wasn't going on and continuing. In 1999, a French study group called COMITA, and I'm so illiterate at French, I don't even want to try to tell you what that stands for. But essentially, it was a group of 13 retired scientists, generals, and space technocrats who got together and examined French government data as well as other governmental data. And they spent 3 years looking at the data that was occurring worldwide, especially in France, but also in Britain, Argentina, Russia, and places like that. Iran is going to be a really cool example. Like Blue Book, so Blue Book concluded that only 701 couldn't be resolved. That means only about 5% were unresolved. That doesn't mean they were still UFOs. It just means they couldn't really pin it down. Well, the same thing with COMITA. COMITA found that everything they could identify and really resolve, about 95% of all the phenomena, but there was this residual 5% that you could not resolve. And what did they see? They saw two things that's really important here. If you get rid of the crackpots, the hoaxes, you get rid of people who are, you know, trying to do pranks on everyone, you get rid of all that, what you find is you have some really highly credible witnesses to some really incredible phenomena. But the other thing that they concluded was, and this is interesting for our purposes, the UAPs that were going on had no hostile intention that they could detect. How do you determine that? Well, so in military terms, there's two ways to look at it. There's capability and there's intention. You could have the capability to dominate a country, but if you have no intention to do it, it's not a threat. So that's interesting because in military parlance, if they have no hostile intention, meaning they don't seem to harm U.S. aircraft or military personnel or other things, that's kind of an interesting component. But they do seem to be under some kind of intelligent control. And we'll see that. Sometimes they retreat. Sometimes they go away. Sometimes they try to flash lights and scare them. Sometimes they can electronically jam an aircraft or sensors. So they cite this really interesting study, and it becomes grist for the mill for conspiracy theorists we'll talk about next week for reasons I'll talk about. But in September of 1976, there was reported to the Imperial Royal Air Force Base that an immobile luminous object was reported above one of the suburbs of Tehran on the northern side of Tehran. And the manager, the night manager of it, had someone look in binoculars. They could see it, and it was pulsing with these white-blue lights. So he asked and ordered, actually, and he was like the third in charge. He was like a brigadier general or something like that. He sent an F-4, which was then current technology, right? He sent an F-4 to go out and check this out, this immobile luminous object. And as soon as the F-4 approached it, its lights, its instrumentation, and its radio went out. And that was interesting. So when the aircraft turned to go back to base, everything came back on. So being around the UFO created this, probably some kind of targeted electronic warfare. So they sent a second F4. And this fellow is really interesting. He becomes literally a general at the end, a commandant in the end of his career, Major Parvez Jafari. And so he sends he's sent up to go investigate this. And he sees up close and personal flashes of intense red, green, orange, and blue lights. So it's changed, which we'll see with UFO phenomena happens. He had a radar lock on it, and it was the size of a 707 refueling tanker against which he and his whole team had trained for years. So he could identify the exact size of it. But he noticed an object detached from the bottom of it, and they were concerned, he was concerned that it was actually targeting a missile or something at his aircraft. So he flipped on the switch for an AIM-9 Sidewinder heat-seeking missile, and as soon as he did that, all of his instrumentation died. Could not target it, could not make it work or anything else. So he began to chase the object, and the thing just completely outmaneuvered him, beyond his capability to follow. When he got back, he debriefed. Now, what was interesting is he gets debriefed by everyone at the base because they were all involved, the communications team, the sensors, and all these folks. He gets debriefed, and there was a lone American there. And it turns out it was a major, a DIA, Defense Intelligence Agency person, who files a report back to Washington, but it's kept secret. And the report basically said, and I'll talk about it more next week, that this is a classic case of a reportable, reliable UFO encounter. Now, that's what leads to people speculating there's conspiracies and all that down the road, but we'll get into that next week. Why was it kept classified? Well, how many people know, when did the Iranian Revolution occur? Does anyone remember? When did the... 79. So after the fall of the Shah of Iran, we didn't need to keep it secret any longer. So typically, and the reason why it was important is we didn't want the Shah of Iran to know that we had people, military intelligence people, talking to people on his military units and in his government. Second incident's reported by Leslie Keene, a journalist that actually put a lot of this together. She's the first one to get the Comita report in the West, and she's fascinated by this. She started getting involved with UFO phenomena, and she reports this, and this too is a credible one, and this one's even more interesting because Jafari and this guy meet each other in 2009, and they share information about their experience. But what was reported on this base, La Jolla Air Force Base in Peru, it was a light bulb or balloon-shaped object observed by humans, but not by radar. And this is the weird thing about UAP and UFOs. If it's one kind of technology, one would expect the shape to be the same and detecting abilities would be the same, but they're not. So Lieutenant Oscar Huertas is in a Sukhoi 22, was ordered to go up and intercept this and to shoot it down. And the reason for that was Peru at this time was one of the few South American countries that had Russian-Soviet equipment. And they thought it was being violated, their national sovereignty was being violated by this thing. So he went up to it, and it didn't shut down anything. It didn't do anything like that. And he actually fired 64 30-millimeter rounds at this thing, and it went right through it, just like a cloud. Poof. And what was interesting is after that, the thing took off. And he tried to chase it, and it outmaneuvered him, and he could not get it. This is where we say it's interesting. They are under intelligent control, but they don't seem hostile. Huertas met with Parviz later, and what was interesting about the conversation, Huertas speculated that the reason why his aircraft wasn't electronically jammed, it was an analog aircraft. It was an older, less sophisticated aircraft than our F-4, which is more digital. So what was the trigger for the U.S. resurgence of interest? We got out of the business in 1969, and then all of a sudden, we're back in it big time now. Well, it was revealed in the New York Times and Politico in 2017, on the same day, that what the U.S. had done is funded what was called the Advanced Either Aviation or Aerospace Threat Identification Program, ATIP. It was a 5-year study between 2007 and 2012. And they called it to examine the problem of unidentified aerial phenomena. I told you the different terms are being used. And it's important to talk about this. I think I've presented on this before to this group, but it was an earmark, or what we would call pork barrel politics, right? Pork is how the government runs things. Senator Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader from Nevada, had one of his biggest supporters, a fellow by the name of Bob Bigelow. Bob Bigelow runs Budget Suites, right? So Budget Inn Suites. He's the one that encouraged Harry Reid to fund this, and Bob Bigelow's company was the one that received all the funding. So no surprise there, government works this way. But what was interesting, they had two programmatic objectives. One was to determine whether Russia or China are involved with this unidentified aerial phenomena going on. Is it foreign adversary systems from Russia or China? And second, so that was the best could be said about the project. The worst, however, was what if we can take advantage of the alien technology we could gather and improve the human condition? And of course, it was terminated in 2012 with little results, except a Federation of American Scientists, Steve Aftergood, said this. He said, the only people that seem to have benefited from this study is Bob Bigelow's corporation. The head of ATIP, Luis Elizondo, he'll be prominently featured next week, but he resigns in 2017, 5 years after this, in frustration with the government, and his original statement was for its overclassification and its non-interest in UFO or UAP phenomena. Now, he'll become important later, so I wanted to put that out there. But this program also then revealed two separate occasions of U.S. Navy incidences that occurred in 2004 and then again in 2014. 2004, the USS Nimitz Carrier Task Force was off the coast of Southern California doing some pre-deployment training, going to the Middle East. And so typically in a carrier task force, you have Aegis destroyers along with it, or cruisers, and submarines, and you have these as a support mechanism, right? And so the USS Princeton was one of these Aegis craft and had its Spy 1 radar system detected this weird-looking phenomena moving between 20 and 80,000 feet rapidly. And Commander David Fravor of an F-A-18 at this time, and one other person, Alex Dietrich, who was featured on a 60-minute special on this, actually observed what looked like either propane tank, but they called it a Tic Tac, but it was large. It would have been, say, size of 150-gallon propane tank, maybe further, bigger. But the observation he made was that it had no visible means of propulsion or control surfaces, like wings. And the other thing is, you can't quite see it here, but it created something on the ocean surface. When calm seas, calm wind, no matter where that thing went, there was something that was going on the surface of the water that followed it. So David Fravor sends Alexandra Dietrich, the female pilot, above to observe in case anything happens. And he goes in to really kind of hone in on this device. And when it aligns with his FA-18, it disappears. Shipborne radar detects it 60 miles away in under a minute. Now, Fravor's point was there's nothing in our inventory or in anyone's known inventory that can behave this fast without control systems, without propulsion. Fravor said it was far superior to my brand new FA-18F and did not operate with any known aerodynamic principles. Sensor data was hard to get because his aircraft's was electronically jammed. There's a famous 90-second video taken of it. If you go online, you can find it. Do the Tic Tac 90-second video or video, and you'll see it. It was taken by a second aircraft sent up. But what it noticed was on the targeting pod, there was no infrared plume from the aircraft, this Tic Tac, meaning it had no visible or even, we can tell, like electronic or engineering or whatever to allow it to be propelled. So that was one incident. Now, David Fravor said nothing about this. He had to eventually be talked into coming back and given testimony, and he does in 2023. He just thought, you know, someone will investigate it, and that's kind of the way the government works. The second operational set of criteria that happened in 2014 and 2015 is off the coast, the East Coast, by Virginia Beach. And this is with the USS Theodore Roosevelt Carrier Task Group, which also has all these other things going on. Now, The one person that's most kind of prevalent here or most dominant is a guy named Ryan Graves. You'll see him in this picture. Ryan Graves was in charge of the sensors, and they had just upgraded all the radars with new software. And the one thing they were kind of concerned about is, well, maybe it's the software upgrades that's allowing us to see some kind of anomaly out there. So they all checked it with infrared sensors, and sure enough, it was confirmed. There was a lot of multiple UAPs. Now, and you can see in this sort of, it's kind of hard to see it here, but on the right side, you can see this cube inside of a sphere. It would interfere with flight, the operations. So safety of flight issues, as the way they phrase it, flight safety issues, were occurring. Well, one in particular, two aircraft are approaching the warning area 72, and at the front of it, warning area 72, right in their pathway was this UAP, and it got so close that it caused them to evade and avoid a mid-air collision with it. Now, they didn't hit it and nothing happened, but they feared for a collision mid-air. So they took evasive actions and fled the scene. But Ryan Graves' observation, now he's also been on 60 Minutes and he's been featured heavily in congressional testimony. His testimony will come out again next week when it comes to conspiracy thinking about this. But what he observed was that the UAP that they observed could accelerate up to Mach 1. It could hold its position against hurricane force winds and outlast our fighter jets in all facets, either in maneuver or speed or anything else. And there was confirmation of this, not just Ryan Graves and a few others, but there was a rear admiral by the name of Tim Gallaudet. Tim Gallaudet was their kind of oceanographer, and he was at a separate location, but he got an email, highly classified channels, warning of multiple collisions with UAP. So they began to do a shutdown of the safety training area, and they've had to do that on multiple occasions, particularly with the U.S. Navy. So because of this and because of these continuing things, the U.S. Navy, under pressure from both Congress and the public, begins to upgrade its guidelines for reporting UAP. And they begin to use the term UAP so as to avoid the stigma, because they really wanted, okay, because right now it was almost all Navy, all around military bases or training formations. And they were really concerned that we needed to get better data, more consistent reporting data. So in 2021, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence publishes its first preliminary assessment of UAP phenomena. And it actually was the U.S. Navy intelligence that worked with the DNI, Office of the Director of National Intelligence, to do this. But in it, they cited 144 incidences since 2001. And out of that 144, only one could be confidently delisted as a deflating balloon. 80 observations were by pilots and sensors, but what they noted in this report, which becomes important for, you'll see in a little bit, is that U.S. aircraft, military aircraft sensors, are ill-suitable or non-suited for looking at and evaluating what UAP phenomena is. It's just, you know, we have targeting radar and all this, and passive sensors intended to detect aircraft, hostile aircraft, and deal with them. Moreover, they don't want to report what kind of capabilities we have for obvious reasons. They want to keep it classified. But they also notice in this report there was a reporting bias, mostly U.S. Navy pilots around training areas and bases. And this becomes important later on because if you want to get a global view of what UAP is doing, you need to have more people. For example, civilian pilots, right? If it's occurring around military installations, perhaps it's occurring outside that, and we do know in the Comita report, a lot of civilian pilots would see and report on UAP phenomena. So what they did notice, though there's kind of bucketed, all right, five categories, and this has remained fairly consistent throughout, five kinds of things that they see going on. Airborne clutter, and what do they mean by clutter? Drones, balloons, birds, all kinds of stuff that goes on in the night, in the sky. And everyone says it's gotten worse, it's not gotten better. I mean, not just in the air, but also in space with Starlink and all the satellites they're sending up. Natural atmospheric phenomena can happen, and people can imagine they saw something that was like a UAP of some kind. Then they worried about, well, what about military development programs or aerospace development programs? And this is kind of interesting because of an engineer, from Area 51 talked about it. He said a lot of times the federal government will not know when Boeing or Lockheed Martin are developing a new thing until it's got proof of concept. And if you look at Boeing's headed up in Seattle, and Lockheed Martin is down in Palmdale, many times, and I've observed it, I've been hunting in that area, and we have observed at night developmental aircraft flying, especially at night, with fighter escorts. But what he says is, you know, a lot of times they will do the testing and development of their stuff before they take it out to Area 51 or to China Lake or wherever, and to seek to get government funding. So government developmental programs and aerospace development programs are the two others. Foreign adversary systems. They wanted to say, okay, is this Russia or China or someone else, North Korea? And then they have another catch-all bin, which just means whatever doesn't fall in there, it falls out here, and maybe that's the legitimate UAP phenomenon that they're going to have to evaluate. Following year, the ODNI comes out with its annual report, and it includes another 510 UAP sightings. So what's interesting is between 2001 and 2021, they only could evaluate 144. But because of the public acknowledgement of UAP as a problem, now 510 new reports come out. The key finding, however, was that neither the 2021 nor the 2022 report found any evidence of two things: either foreign adversary systems like Russia or China, or on an extraterrestrial life, the systems or technology. But the Department of Defense, the DOD as I have it labeled here, decided because of public and congressional pressure to establish an interim group called the UAP-TF, UAP Task Force, set it up in 2020. And this becomes important later when we see testimony next week about government conspiracies. Congress gets further involved, of course, like it always does, in a certain way. And the National Defense Authorization Act of 2022 established a new office within the Department of Defense called AARO. The All Domain, gotta love DOD names, right? If you don't have an acronym, you don't have a place in the government or funding. All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, AARO. Now, what I like about the structure is the two things they really want to, you know, sort out is it foreign adversary systems or is it alien technology? They have 50% of the people devoted in that are tasked from intelligence agencies looking at the potential for foreign adversary systems. And then the other 50% are technology or scientists looking at the sensors and object analysis that is trying to characterize what are these UAP that we're dealing with. Its inaugural report 2 years later now goes way beyond the original 510 and the 144 and evaluates 757. So what you can see, if you chart it on a graph, you start seeing because the U.S. government's now established as a whole of government effort to evaluate what's going on, it continues to increase the number of people that will report UAP phenomena. And the FAA, you see here, the Federal Aviation Administration, if they're not laid off right now, or at least under government shutdown like everyone else, reported out of that 757, 392 reported by civilian pilots. So you can see it's starting to spread out. It's starting to reach who they wanted. The AARO office said, hey, we've resolved 350, so not quite half. But they found that 70%, like, were balloons. That really, the airborne clutter is the biggest part of this. Other aircraft that they misidentified, maybe the observer misidentified, and there's a lot of reasons why that can happen. Satellites like Starlink, birds, and unmanned aerial systems or drones. These are the biggest things that the resolution was 100% these things, something like this. Of that latest 757 reports, there was, and this is where we get to that, you know, remember I said UAP, anomalous phenomena. In the air domain, 757, 708 were in the air. So typically where aircraft fly. Space domain, there was 49 reports. So that's defined as beyond or above 100,000 feet of elevation, but zero in the maritime domain. So that's kind of interesting. None of the maritime stuff, the transmedium stuff that we heard earlier, we're seeing in this period when more and more people are starting to report it. What is the conclusion of the AAR? And by the way, they're continuing to have a report, annual report, so this will have to be updated yearly. But they only reported two concerns, safety, flight safety concerns. And three pilots reported either being tailed or shadowed by a UAP out of 757. But again, like the intelligence agencies before it, the AAR reported no evidence of extraterrestrial beings, activity, technology, or foreign adversary systems. Now, the people that would really prefer to see UAP be alien are dismissive of AARO. Of course, it's just another government bureaucracy. But you should go to their website. You should really, if you're interested, go just type in AARO, and they have a dashboard that catalogs everything they've cited and all the data, and they actually spent a lot of time and a lot of effort at looking at all the data since 1945 to see if they had ever had any evidence of an unidentified UFO retrieval program or anything like that, and they found zero of it. But they also then go through and show you how they resolve, and they show you videos of how they were able to resolve many of these things. So you can look at the website and see it's an ongoing concern. NASA has gotten involved as well. The NASA established an independent study team by members of both NASA and outside. They had a number of recommendations. They want to bring a lot of their scientific expertise. One of the things that NASA does is it works with the FAA on reporting and air safety issues. They can bring a whole lot of capability to the table if needed. And what they recommended, and I'm sorry I had to initial it here, but they use machine learning. ML stands for machine learning, and AI, or artificial intelligence. What they're hoping for, one of the things that they fear, is that the inconsistent reporting mechanisms that we see across all government agencies and private sector, so between civilian aircraft like United, American, and all those, or foreign countries and their systems, or private planes, and all the agencies of the U.S. government are not on the same page with how they report. And they insisted that until we get those reports perfectly consistent, we cannot really use machine learning and AI to go back and look at all the data that we get and really ferret out the one-offs, the real cases that should be interesting. But they recommended how to get to that point, and AARO is looking at how to do it. The future work of the AARO is ongoing, I should say. When I say future, it's out into the future from where we sit. I have up here GIT, it's Georgia Institute of Technology. Because of the finding that the sensors, the military sensors, aircraft sensors, are one, highly classified, and two, ill-suited to detect what UAP is and how it's working, they recommended, and GIT has produced, a system called Gremlin. And it literally will be a suite of sensors that can be deployed into an area where there's a number of UAP sightings. And hopefully these sensor systems are better adept and better able to detect and really resolve what this phenomena is. So what's cool is they're also working, again, as I mentioned, you know, they even have the FBI involved. If there's civilian reports, police agencies, they try to encourage them. But in the big level, the high level, with NASA, the FAA, Oak Ridge Laboratory. Now, why is a Department of Energy laboratory involved? Because their goal is, should they retrieve an alien artifact or a UAP artifact, they want to be able to understand what it is. So Oak Ridge Laboratory is involved, MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and GIT. But these are just some of the few. All across the aviation of all the services now are on the same page of the reporting. The civilians under the FAA are getting more and more consistent with the reporting. So this effort is going. It's a whole-of-government effort intended to bring about a focused resolution to this problem. The conclusion I have in this, though, is given that what we're going to present in the whole book, and let me go back and talk a little bit more about the whole book. The goal of the original book was to kind of, you know, Hugh has been heavily involved with UFO phenomena for years because he was, as a young person, he was very adept at astronomy. And so when he was on volunteered for like, you know, non-professional version of it, or later his professional career, he got to take all the reports. Our goal originally was to look at UFO phenomena. Now we're updating it to try to bring it to the future, to where we are today, and have it last, because Hugh, Ken Samples, and I recognize this will be our last UFO book. Ross, no offense, but this one will not be named Lights in the Sky and Little Green Men, that'll be settled. But my conclusion to this chapter, which is not in the AI video I'm going to show you on this, is that we're not going to find it. We're not going to resolve UAP phenomena because of the reason we talk about in the book, and which Hugh and Ken will flesh up further. If you remember, if you've read the first book, you'll know that our kind of basic thesis is that if you exclude all those things that are really can be resolved, and there's very small residual that seem genuinely something troubling, they're observed by credible witnesses with some sensor data, but they're incredible phenomena. They do not conform to the laws of physics. And those things, and Hugh will talk about, and I don't want to go too far into his field, but essentially, in his experience, it's people who have open doors to the occult. And they're the ones that are involved, or they're affiliated with someone that has open doors to the occult. So our goal is gospel-centered. If you have this experience, if you have this kind of experience, there are ways we can help you step out of being involved with those things. And you may not even know that you are. In some cases he's talked about, Hugh has, I should say, when he was up here and when he was on doing street ministry, he would go to homes where people would call him and say, hey, there's something going on, there's poltergeist, whatever. And his question to them was, well, did you do tarot cards? Are you involved in the occult? Are you doing, horoscopes or whatever? No, none of that. We're Christian. We're faithful. Do you have any objects that are associated with this? No. We're Christians. This is all good. We're righteous. We follow Christ. Do you know the previous owners of the house? Well, not really, because, typically you don't know the owner. Well, let's go investigate. And went upstairs, and he found a Star of David, but the demonic one, the satanic use of it, still in the house. And once they got rid of that, boom, it was solved. The whole phenomenon they were having at their home. So our purpose is gospel-centered to do this, but we're also paying attention to the data. And what I want you to see is that we're not trying to force-fit this. It's actually very rigorous in how we approach it. And I don't have the chapter. The manuscript was given to Reasons October 1. It's now been sent out for all the chapters to peer reviewers. So we get each of our three sections will be reviewed by outside reviewers. Then it comes back. Then it goes to editorial. Then we comment on the peer reviews comments. Then it goes to editorial two or three more times. So we're going to be busy up until this is actually published in April of 2027. So you're getting the first kind of look at some of this phenomena, and we're going to get the look at my two chapters. So my conclusion, though, is in this section is we are not going to know, we are not going to be able to resolve what UAP is, even with this whole government effort. And anyone knows how government works. It's not the most efficient, coherent, concise thing in the world. It's kind of like getting thousands of cats to herd in one direction. So that's it. I'm going to set it up for Q&A unless we want to see the AI video quickly. We could do that. It'll only take 8 minutes. You tell me what you would like to do. Okay. Let me finish. It's got to finish its little maneuver here. All right. This is the eight. This is, so there is an AI add-on to your computer. It's based on Gemini, but it doesn't let Gemini get trained by it. So it's a way to put proprietary things on it and generate slides, presentations, and had this new feature, and I thought I'd try it. It's called video making. So bear with me and see what you think. I'd be curious your take on it.
For half a century, the U.S. government...
We don't have sound that goes up. How do we do that, Jamie?
I said that they may not be able to do it.
Okay. How about if I take this off and put it by... We can try it. Let's try it. See if it works. Okay. Let's see if it works.
Basically said, the book is closed on UFOs. But now, that book has been thrown wide open. So what on earth changed? I mean, after decades of official denial, suddenly the Pentagon is creating special offices, Congress is holding hearings, even NASA's getting involved. To really get what's going on, we gotta rewind a bit. All right, so to set the stage for what's happening today, we need to understand two things. This long period of official silence and a really important change in how everyone talks about this stuff. First up, the name. You'll notice people in the know don't really say UFO anymore. The new official term is UAP, which stands for Unidentified Anomalous Phenomena. And look, this is way more than just a name change. It's a really strategic move. For one, it helps get rid of that stigma that made pilots nervous to report what they saw. And second, it broadens the whole thing beyond just flying objects. We're now talking about transmedium craft, stuff that can move seamlessly from the air, dive into the ocean, and then pop right back out again. So, this official silence, it really kicked off back in 1969. That's when the Air Force shut down its famous investigation, Project Blue Book. The public story was, hey, nothing to see here, folks. But behind the scenes, something like 5% of their cases were still officially unresolved. For the next 50 years, though, the government's line was simple. We're out of the UFO business, period. But here's the thing. Just because the US officially stopped looking, it didn't mean these encounters just stopped. Take this classic case from 1976, over Tehran, Iran. An Iranian pilot scrambles his F-4 jet to go after this brilliant, flashing object in the sky. As he gets close, his jet's instruments and comms just go dead. He pulls away, and everything comes back online. So they send a second pilot up. And get this, as he's about to fire a missile, his entire weapons panel goes dark. And this wasn't just some story from halfway around the world. No, the US Defense Intelligence Agency, the DIA, they investigated it themselves. And their assessment, which we can now read, called it a classic case that ticked every single box for a legitimate study. So think about that. Even during those so-called silent years, our own intelligence agencies knew that these incredible and frankly alarming encounters were still happening. Okay, so if that was happening in the 70s, how did we get from decades of silence to where we are today with open investigations? Well, the real catalyst wasn't something happening overseas. It was a series of absolutely shocking incidents involving the US Navy's own elite pilots. The first crack in that wall of silence actually happened in secret. Back in 2007, Senator Harry Reid managed to get $22 million for a secret Pentagon program called ATIP, specifically to study this stuff. Now, it was officially shut down in 2012, but then bam! In 2017, the New York Times and Politico dropped these bombshell articles exposing the whole thing. And with that story came some absolutely mind-blowing accounts from the US Navy. And this encounter, this one was a real game changer. It's 2004, off the coast of California. Pilots from the USS Nimitz carrier group are sent to check out these objects that their top-of-the-line radar had been tracking for days. What they find is this 40-foot-long, white, perfectly smooth object. They nicknamed it the Tic Tac, and it's just hovering erratically over the water. The crazy part? No wings, no rotors, no visible sign of propulsion at all. The lead pilot, Commander David Fravor, we're talking a Top Gun graduate here. He tries to get closer. The object mirrors his every move. And then, whoosh, it accelerates at a speed he said he'd never seen before and just disappears instantly. His conclusion was pretty blunt. Its performance was far, far superior to his brand new fighter jet, and it just defied everything we know about aerodynamics. You think that would be a one-off, right? Nope. About a decade later, it starts happening again, but this time off the East Coast. And it wasn't just once. For months, pilots from the USS Theodore Roosevelt carrier group were having daily encounters with UAPs. They described seeing things like a dark gray cube inside a transparent sphere, and these things were flying right between their jets. One time, it got so close, it was officially logged as a near mid-air collision. That's a huge deal, a major safety of flight incident. Okay, so now the situation is getting genuinely dangerous. We know from a secure email that Fleet Forces Command sent out an urgent warning, and their concern wasn't aliens or some secret Russian jet, it was about the immediate safety of their own pilots. The message was clear. If we can't figure this out, we're gonna have to shut down our training exercises. This wasn't some weird curiosity anymore, it was a direct threat to critical military operations. So what do? You've got undeniable evidence coming from your most credible people, your Top Gun pilots. The government simply couldn't stay silent anymore. This reality forced them to create a whole new official system to finally tackle this problem head on. The official response really came in two big steps. First, back in 2020, the Pentagon set up the Unidentified Aerial Phenomena Task Force, the UAPTF. But honestly, that was kind of seen as a temporary band-aid. So just 2 years after that, Congress stepped in and mandated something much, much bigger, a permanent, well-funded office called the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, or AARO for short. And make no mistake, AARO is a big deal. Its job is to be the central hub for a massive whole-of-government effort. We're talking pulling in resources from the entire intelligence community, every single branch of the military, plus key civilian groups like NASA and the FAA. For the first time ever, all these different parts of the government are being forced to talk to each other and work on this together. That alone tells you how seriously they're taking this now. All right, so we have this big new office, all these resources, a direct order from Congress. So the big question is, what have they actually found? Let's take a look at the official data. Well, the first thing that jumps out is just the sheer number of reports coming in. The first report in 2021 looked at 144 cases. Just a year later, that number shot up to over 500. And the latest count from ARO is over 750 reports. Now, this surge doesn't necessarily mean there are more UAPs out there. What it really means is that the new system is working. That stigma is gone, and pilots and other military folks finally feel safe reporting what they're seeing. So, what's in all these reports? Well, let's be clear. Of the cases that ARO has actually solved, the vast majority turn out to be pretty boring, actually. A huge chunk, something like 70%, are just balloons or other airborne junk. The rest, usually birds, drones, or satellites. And that's a really important point to remember. Most of the time, what gets reported as a UAP has a perfectly normal explanation. But this brings us to the big questions, right? Is it aliens? According to the official government reports, the answer is no. They say they found zero evidence of any extraterrestrial technology. Okay, so is it secret Russian or Chinese tech? Again, the intelligence community says there's no indication of that. But does that mean everything's all solved and tied up with a neat little bow? Not even close. Of all those hundreds of reports ARO has collected, nearly half are still officially unresolved. And that's where NASA comes in. To help crack those tough, unresolved cases, NASA is now officially on the team. Their independent panel recommended bringing some serious scientific firepower to the table. You know, using way more advanced sensors to collect better data, and using AI to sift through all of it to find the really weird stuff that's currently slipping through the cracks. And that brings us right back to where we started. After 50 years of saying nothing to see here, the US government is all in. We're talking a permanent office, a whole of government approach, and cutting edge tools from NASA. The big question now is, with all this new focus, will this unprecedented effort finally be enough to explain what's been, up until now, unexplained?
Okay. By the way, how did you like the video? What did you think of it? I'm seeing all the mistakes it made, but now, that's just because I've been looking at it a little bit. I'm seeing, like, you know, does start of a quote, doesn't end with a quote, different little things all over. And then also some of the conclusions, and she didn't conclude where I did in the chapter. She, that's not a she, it's not a real human. But anyway, it was a fun little experiment for me to try to see if I can get it and then find a way to send it. So as a kind of a primer, as a teaser, I'm going to shorten it and work on editing it. But anyway, it was kind of a fun little project. So with that, let's open it up to Q&A. Ross?
Mark, thank you. That was an amazing presentation. I think everybody here was riveted.
Thank you. Thank you.
So as we always do, we'll take turns answering questions online and then live in the audience. I hope you all have a lot of questions, because if you don't ask questions, I wrote down about 15,000 of my own. But is this looks like the line's back here. So Doug's first. Like he always is. I think he lives here, so he can just be first in line. Okay, let's start with an online question. Erlene Schmidt says, where is it there? What happened to claims of retired Israeli space program director Chaim Eshed? And can you explain who that is and what the...
I can't explain him. I do know enough about it to know that there's a lot of things that are outside of the scope of our project, because originally Hugh said, we want you to cover all the international incidents since 1969, but you have 3,500 words to do it. And that includes your end notes. So by definition, because of the constraints of space, there were so many things I had to let go. I would like to have spent more time on Russia, the Israeli claims, even, Loeb, Avi Loeb at Harvard, but I couldn't get into him. So I apologize. You could ask Hugh when he comes back, because he tends to follow all these things and knows more than I do on it. Sir, next one, please.
Okay. Hi. I've got many questions, too. I'll cycle around. One quick clarification. You showed photos of the Tic Tac above the ocean, mm-hmm. and the Roosevelt's, the cube photo. Are those, in fact, photos, or are they artist conceptions?
The Tic Tac is an artist conception.
Ah.
And I think the other is a presentation that Graves and others did in Congress as an animated version. So they're not the exact way. Because we didn't capture pictures of that. They did of the Tic Tac, but it's so far away, you couldn't have seen it.
So the Tic Tac hovering above the ocean was an artist conception?
Correct.
Okay, thank
yeah.
you. All right.
It looked like a propane tank, didn't it?
Yeah, it does. It looked too perfect. You never see a UAP
photo
like
that. No,
you
don't see
like yeah,
no right, there's that right. great Facebook meme and a cartoon that once did, you know, hey, we're seeing UFOs. Quick, get out your fuzziest camera and get a shot, right? So
the first real question, I'm sure that in the reports they talk about the difference between the question, are we viewing physical objects or are we viewing optical phenomena? Now, by optical phenomena, I mean like taking your laser pointer and entertaining your cat, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
you can make some fabulously fast motions with your wrist,
mm-hmm.
and it looks like extraterrestrial technology. Mm-hmm. But how do the reports handle that question?
So that's why I recommended looking at the AARO website, because they'll actually show you videos, and they'll show you anomalies that they can't resolve. But because of its behavior, it wasn't either alien or foreign adversary systems. But you're right, and there's a ton of it on the AAR website, and I would highly recommend you go to that, because they'll point out in a number of cases, and I'm not going to go through them all, obviously, or even partially, but a lot of times they're aircraft that are further in the distance than people think, so they look like they're stationary. And so it's not an optical illusion, it's a problem of sensors, our eyes, and it's also a problem sometimes of our own sensors that are taking camera shots or digital photos. But yeah, they have a ton of things on there that I highly recommend you go look at, and that how they resolve the optical problem, how they determine its atmospheric phenomena versus, you know, as some would say, the bad old days of Blue Book, a lot of times it was done very dismissively, meaning swamp gas or whatever. Some of that was made up to cover. But by the way, you know, it's something I don't address in either here or that, because again of these constraints. There is some, and I think legitimate suspicion, well, we know for a fact that the U-2s, back in, not the band, but the actual aircraft, back in the 50s, many people in the Air Force community were happy to have people reporting them as UFOs, because it covered our ability to fly at much higher altitude than most people, and we didn't want Russia to know. And there may be some of that still going on with some of the other phenomena, and I think that's, you can't dismiss that component. In other words, an intentional deception going. Wall Street Journal has done a couple of things on this in the last couple of years that you might find interesting. It's not entirely convincing the way they present it. It's not an in-depth study, but it's a very provocative thesis that they have, the Wall Street Journal has. Ross, sir.
Sure. Okay, Chris Thompson says, Dr. Clark, thank you for your talk. I look forward to next week's. However, could you please comment on the many reports of unidentified drones over military bases in the last couple of years?
That's being resolved. It's not resolved yet. But I will tell you, as a drone owner myself, I mean, I have a recreational drone certification. And one of the things you know, if you want to keep your drone, you don't fly over people, you don't get money for what you do, and you certainly don't go near military bases or airports, because it's a hazard. And I don't know if you remember, there was that one guy who just got jail time and a fine, huge fine. During the Palisades fire, he was flying his drone up to go look at it, and it damaged one of the tankers that came down from Canada to support our firefighting efforts. But a lot of them, there is some suspicion that some might have been planted off a ship by North Korea or Iran, but there's no evidence to support that. It mostly is recreational flyers that are doing things illegal. Now, having said that, one of the things that's sort of embarrassing is that we can't always detect drones. This is the one thing that the Russia-Ukraine war is teaching us. We have to find out better ways to detect and counter drones, because if they're flying over in New Jersey and other places, military installations, that's a problem. And we are coming with counter drone technology for that. But we are, so far, there's no real evidence that it's anything other than recreational drone users. Sir.
Dr. Clark, regarding the Iranian pilot and the two Navy incidents, you all have come up with the occult is part of a lot of these events, but is there any connection regarding these three military events?
So that's where, I mean, here's one of the biggest challenges we have. It's our RUFO thesis from the first book. And we looked at all this to see if anything has changed, and nothing has changed. Hugh's experience is so much deeper than mine. I really would ask you to ask him. But the essential point is, and the correction I would have, and I have suggested this to Hugh, is that not everyone that sees it has an open door to the occult, but someone does. And that's what's producing the visual observations. So, and keep in mind, just like the angels of old, right, the celestial beings, where, you know, the man in linen, when he came to Daniel, his friends fainted, and they were righteous Jews. They fainted and fled. Daniel himself fainted and had to be revived multiple times to be able both to endure the vision of what he was seeing and to hear the apocalypse or the revelation he was getting. So just because there's UAP in the area doesn't mean everyone involved has got an open door to the occult. But someone does, and may be deeply into it, that's creating this access point or entree by the fallen angelic realm. And the interesting thing is, none of this activity is benign. It's malign. It usually is to fascinate, to harass, to get people to think about stuff. And why is it that, and this is the question, the larger question that Hugh and Ken also look at, that all throughout human history, there's been some kind of paranormal phenomena that matches the, or just slightly exceeds the technology of the day. In the 19th century, it was the dirigibles, the floating balloons, aircraft, before we had the technology, before the patents had been signed. They were seen and observed by people. So it's almost as if that the spiritual realm uses the technology of the day to fascinate people. And so that's where my answer would be. I hope that answers your question. Yes, sir.
Tinny W. asks a Daniel question. Great. Hi, Dr. Clark. I'm a fan of yours. What are your thoughts on studying Daniel in how to perform well at work? She says, I get good performance reviews but struggle with promotions.
So that's a very good question. And I think if I had been able to spend personal time, you know, on a personal communication, I can help her. I would say, generally speaking, if you get good performance reviews but you're not getting promotion, is it your bosses who are not being honest and fair? There was a period of time in my young career that I came to terms with that, and it was by, I had a gunnery sergeant who, and I was a sergeant, E5 in the Marine Corps, and that pattern helped me later on. I kept performing at the high level I did, believing that we work ultimately for Jesus Christ and not for human beings. And some human beings, for a variety of reasons, not just sin, but also personal animus or incompetence and things like that, won't promote you. So I don't know that particular case. That would be an interesting thing to pray about. I would say, too, that it would be useful to take your prayer to God and to literally ask Him, is there something in me that's blocking this promotion, or is it in them? And in either case, help me make this make this happen. Because, you know, Daniel didn't look to promotion. He looked to do righteous job and yet got promoted. And so I don't know that the purpose is to work well so as to get promoted, although we all want it, right? It's to honor God. And if we get promoted in the process, then that's a unintended consequence. It'd be my short answer to it. But yeah, so.
As a former manager, I might add showing initiative. You can do your work exceptionally well, but you also need to show initiative to place yourself above the rest of the crowd.
Yeah. And I would say, too, I would add, it was one thing that, so I'm on the board for reasons, and we were just in South Carolina, and Hugh was there, and then we went to the SES conference. But one of the things that, you know, I'm kind of hoping that Reasons takes on board is this idea, the way the military works is, because you could be killed any time, you have to train your subordinates and anticipate your leadership, because they could, in Vietnam, privates, cooks, were company commanders on short periods of time. So you have to be trained. And so I like that. Add the initiative to it as well. Learn your boss's job. Not to take it over, but to be a better employee. Yes, sir.
So, let's see. You mentioned that the intelligences, if they are, appear to be malign. And I'll just note as a counter to that, that when the F-4 and other aircraft instrumentation is disabled, or automobiles in other reports, right? Mm-hmm. It's interesting that none of the flight controls were disabled, and these are fly-by-wire aircraft, at least the newer ones are. So they were blinded, but the pilots were still able to fly their aircraft. So that's an interesting
thing in these reports, that if it has the ability with electronic systems to electronically interfere with it, it does that, or it avoids it, like it did with the Sukhoi. After it realized it couldn't do it, it took off and got out of there so fast the pilot couldn't chase it, and no one could. So, anyway.
Regarding the Georgia Tech sensor suite, mm-hmm. they're developing a new sensor suite because the military sensors are not intended for this purpose. What is the difference in the sensor suite? What are they adding or changing?
So that's sort of classified. I don't know fully. but NASA had recommended hyperspectral and multispectral and hyperspectral ways to evaluate it, because that way you could, and I'm not an engineer or scientist, so I couldn't really explain it, but essentially it gives you a heck of a lot better precision in identifying what the objects could or could not be. You could actually detect what kind of material it's made of and things like that. So I don't know. I know that's from NASA recommended, but the Gremlin suite is a highly classified program that has been taken to testing grounds. And I think my guess is they generically say into areas where UAP are observed, but they don't tell you where those are. So that's part of the classification of it. And it's not to hide it from us. It's to I'm not sure exactly who it's intended to hide it from. The government loves to classify things. This is undeniably true, and it's been impossible to reverse, even though we all know it's true. I could go on that bandwagon for a long time. All the people that you'll see in the testimony next week complain about it, but it continues. But I think it could be in part because if it's different than the suite of sensors for our aircraft, we don't want our adversaries knowing what's different from our suite of sensors for the aircraft. But that's just a guess. Yes, sir.
Chris Thompson says, Hugh recommends Jacques Vallée.
Yes.
Could you comment on his book, Trinity? And then he says, cover-up mentioned plus non-local phenomena asserted.
I'm not sure what that last part meant.
I don't either, but can you comment on...
I have not read his book, Trinity. I have read his book, The Moscow... It's called the Moscow Archives. It's UFOs in Russia. And the reason why I thought that was interesting is originally I was intended to cover the, you know, not just U.S., but also international UFO phenomena. And I thought this would be a good entree. The problem was it was almost generic in the sense it was personal. It was him going to meet, you know, different Russian scientists or military people and talk about it. It was at the end or just at the turn after the fall of the Soviet Union, so they were still in the Soviet mindset, but they were now open to talk. So that's the only book of Jacques I've read, and I apologize. I'm not sure Hugh has read that one. He has read this book because I lent it to him this summer because I just thought he'd be interested in it. I don't know about the book Trinity. I have not read it.
I'll ask you one of my questions, Dr. Clark. If the truly unexplainable ones are demonic or spiritual in origin, do you have an idea or a theory of why they aren't hostile?
I think, it's like anything, so the occult, and Hugh's better to speak to this because he dealt with it. They are hostile, okay? They are hostile, but they want an entrance, an entree. And what better way of getting more and more people enamored of the occult than by becoming fans or fascinated with UFOs? And they are hostile in this sense, and Ken Samples deals with this both in the original, but he'll deal with it more in this one. If you look at UFO cults and religions, almost everyone that's been either abducted or contacted has suffered long-term psychological, spiritual, and sometimes physical harm. It is intended. They are hostile in the sense of their ultimate goal is not benign, but they're not acting hostile, like physically trying to take over, like an alien might do, right? If you'd watch any of your movies, Independence Day, whatever. Man, I love that one too, by the way. If you watch any of these great movies, either, Signs, that was a great one.
Yeah.
Either they are on a reconnaissance mission or they're ready to invade in full force, right? And when they do, it's with physical force. But what they meant was by hostile intention, none of them seem to do that. And that's what they mean.
Why do you think they don't do that?
Because I think they want entrees, more people to believe in the occult.
Okay.
Yeah. I have one over here.
Okay. And, let's see. Roger Raymer says, what will the title of the new book be?
Good question. I don't know yet. My preferred, I've already plugged it in, but it's ultimately up to editorial, is The Problem with UAP. But Hugh's added in SETI, ETI, and a couple of other things. So the original working title was horrible. It was Star Trek, UAP, and something. And it's like, no. But we give out 20 ideas. Editorial will do a marketing analysis and see what sticks. I think The Problem with UAP would be the best one. But it's not going to be light. I'll tell you this. He did say the other night, last Thursday night, when he did his opening for the SES conference, he said he was told by a publisher, if we had changed the title to Lights in the Sky and Little Green Women, we might have had more sales. But, that's Hugh's humor, and so I'm not going there.
Chris Thompson again. What do you think might happen to all of these initiatives you've described in light of the Trump administration and DOGE serious cuts to NASA and other agencies?
So that's a very good question. And without getting political, what I will say is, let me take you back. The reason why I think Blue Book and all these others were lack credibility is because they didn't take it seriously. Because after a certain point, let me give you the bureaucratic answer. And I don't mean a bureaucratic from me. Bureaucracies. Okay, how do you get promoted in the Air Force? You fly planes, and you do really well, and you learn new aircraft. How do you get promoted to be a general or an admiral in the Navy? You either command subs or aircraft carrier, aircraft carriers. How do you get promoted in the Marine Corps? It's infantry. It's all those things, right? Every service has its bureaucratic kind of cream, and everything else is either in support or distraction. And the UFO projects were a distraction. In AARO, yes, they're moving along, and we've had cuts. They're going to find, and I think the parallel will happen, is that if they can't make resolution, it'll start diminishing in its importance. And then all the conspiracy theorists will see the government's hiding it or it's really covering it up. And I think it's more bureaucratic and organizational than intentional, if that makes sense. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I have a question for you. A couple years ago, I believe it was, there was a reporter checking out the USS Nimitz. It was having trouble with UAPs that actually dove into the ocean next to it.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a Navy ship that experienced this. And they interviewed Mr. Elizondo.
Yes.
And he said, we think this is a spiritual thing.
Luis Elizondo said that?
Yeah.
Well, so here's the interesting thing that Hugh will deal with more and Jacques Vallée deals with and a number of astronomers, and even David Grusch and Luis Elizondo, they think it's a interdimensional. And that's kind of an interesting thing because within the constraints of the physical universe, it's highly unlikely that you could travel. I mean, it's almost impossible that you could travel between galaxies, let alone planets, and survive cosmic radiation, the time that it would take, all those things. That it has to be interdimensional. But that opens the door for what we've been talking about. But then David Grusch and Luis Elizondo subscribe to a different. It's interdimensional, but it's like a hologram. On two-dimensional, it's like a holographic projection of this interdimensional stuff. I didn't hear Luis Elizondo saying it was spiritual. I do think it is spiritual, but I'm not sure I heard him ever say that, and I've read pretty much everything he said. And he says a lot, so maybe I missed something. So thank you for asking that. I'm going to look for it now.
Mark, how much of this do you think is tuned to our culture? Like, if we were in Ireland 100 years ago, maybe we'd be seeing leprechauns.
Yep, he's exactly right, and that's the thing. Why Bigfoot? Why Yetis? Why Chupacabra in Puerto Rico? Why dirigibles in the 19th century? Why leprechauns earlier on? Satyrs, all the various things we've seen throughout history. It's culturally relevant, and you don't see UFO. You do see it in strange places. We've seen UFOs in some places in Latin America, too. But in Russia, and Hugh will give a really interesting case on that. In Russia, there was a town that saw over 35 continuing days of incidents of people seeing alien beings coming out of crafts. Yeah, and it's also known as a very corrupt, spiritually corrupt, area of the former Soviet Union, Russia, too. So,
last question.
One of the key findings from the 2021 and 22 events was that no evidence of extraterrestrial either life and or
technology or craft artifacts
were found. But do we even know what we would look for? We can't. Our scientists have trouble agreeing on what to look for when we send a probe to Mars, right? Mm-hmm. So, what do we look for?
Well, that's a good question. So it comes to our conspiracy thing. You're leading me right in. Thank you. David Grusch will make the claim that we have captured alien saucers, that it has these fantastical qualities, but no one's seen it, right? Or alien biologics, presumably dead ET. We don't know what that would look like. But I guess the way you would say it is, if you found some evidence, some artifacts that didn't fit the periodic tables or that was constructed in a way that's obviously alien or it had... I mean, this is the kind of a crazy thing. The propulsion system should be fantastic for us to do research. Stealth, the two things, the aerospace, if it was involved in it, we would love to have, and you can talk to almost anyone involved in aerospace, the stealth ability of these craft because they can disappear and reappear elsewhere, or their propulsion. Those two things would revolutionize our understanding of physics and our military capability, and yet we've seen no evidence of that. So it would be outside of the bounds of what we see normally, and that's, I think, what they're looking for. And that's why they bring in Oak Ridge National Lab. They bring in a lot of scientists who have the capability to be able to detect that. So I hope that answers your question.
I said last question, but I lied because I have a really good question. As followers of Jesus Christ, what do we do with this? How do we put this in our puny brains?
Okay.
And kind of a secondary question, if we personally were to experience something that we were convinced fit in this category, what do we do?
So that's two questions. I thought you said one.
Yeah, well, I lie a lot.
Yeah, you do, apparently. Okay.
Okay,
so... one, I would say talk with a pastor, talk with someone reliable, trustworthy, who you know and trust, and can get some spiritual guidance. But I would say this, 50% of Americans believe either an ET or know someone that does, or believe they have seen a UFO or know someone that does. So it's not going away. It's a phenomenon. It's out there, and it's culturally relevant. If we are to have a witness, the other thing I would say is more millennials today get their daily dose of the supernatural from horoscope than the Bible. So that tells me that we need to be prepared how to deal with this, because to give the gospel to a spiritually darkened person, you will have to spend time in prayer and realize you're up against hostile spiritual forces. So I think the first thing is get equipped, be aware of it, realize that a lot of people have seen it. But if you have seen it, you know, one, don't think you're evil, or don't think you're in problem. It could be for innocent reasons that you're not aware, or it could be misidentified. The vast majority are typically misidentified phenomena. But if you do see something and you have lasting spiritual consequences to it, definitely go to a pastor that you trust and a person you trust and pray over it. So I think that's my simple answer to your great questions.
Thank you so much. Would you close us in prayer?
Sure, absolutely. Father in heaven, we gather today in the name of Jesus Christ. Lord, you are our sovereign. These angelic, fallen angelic beings are messing with human beings and trying to detract them and distract them from the gospel of Jesus Christ, your Son. Father, we are grateful that by following you in both faith and belief and obedience, that we can remain free of this influence, this hostile influence, which is not intended for our good, but for our harm. Lord, only you are good, and you have made plans, and you know the plans for us, and they are good for us. So, Lord, we thank you for this time. We thank you for the fact that we get to write this book and then share it and talk about it with an engaging audience. Lord, I am privileged to be able to share a first glimpse of something that's coming out in about a year and a half, or maybe a little bit sooner, depending, God willing, on the editorial team and all that goes on between. Father, we thank you and give you all the praise and honor in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you. Thank you, guys.